Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and tour panel discussion this morning, 12 minutes past 9 o'clock. Very nice to have you with us on this sultry Wednesday.
Yes.
It's the first of August. I guess we are not meteorologically or scientifically in the dog days of summer.
No more.
But we could be.
Certainly.
Give it time.
Anecdotally, yes. We certainly could be in the dog days of summer. Anyway, it is very nice to have you with us on this Wednesday. And let me introduce our panel to you. We have a great panel. Joe Bonilla is with us. Joe, you've been on the West Coast.
I've been on the West Coast. I've been everywhere except for here. And I'm glad to be back on this first day of August.
Excellent. I never asked you, but were you working or were you having fun or were you doing a little bit of both?
This was fun, but because of what I do for a living, you know, you're never too far away. You know, you are essentially a communication surgeon without surgeon pay. And so clients feel that they can call you at any time. They have no respect to time zones. So.
Which they can. You're always available.
Of course I am.
You're always available.
Of course I am.
Unlike the journalism profession where, you know, you just sit waiting by the phone, right?
Yeah. You know, no, I'm going to give a shout out this morning to the State House reporters in Massachusetts who were up well past midnight with legislature as they were trying to, you know, go past deadline of deliberating for their session. So shout out to the State House reporters. I could give you a lot of credit. I hope someone's buying you breakfast pizza and a box of Dunks.
Oh, that would be good.
Yep.
Yeah. Breakfast pizza and a box of Dunks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pizza and
it's
in
the breakfast
dunks.
Of yep. journalism.
That's right. That's right.
It could have been from last night. We'll still eat it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And making the grand entrance, WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. And good morning, Alan. You can talk from across the room. How are you?
Hi.
Excellent. Welcome. Good morning to the program, and let's get started. It's good to see you all. Thank you very much for
good to see you, Joe.
For being yes. here. Well, you know, I read this novel earlier this summer. And,
how untypical of you!
I know, and it was called There by this guy Tommy Orange, who's a Native American and wrote an amazing novel. And in it, there is an entire scene that the denouement of the novel is this event that takes place at a convention center with a 3D printed gun. And I was fascinated by this. And when I interviewed the author, we talked about this whole idea of 3D printed guns. And he said, you know, we're just moments away from this. Well, here we are. Mm-hmm. And a federal judge blocked posting of blueprints for 3D printed guns hours before they were to be published. This is a weird story. And but basically, you know, you can just print these things. The equipment, yes, is expensive, but with the plans, you can print these things relatively easily.
And it's not, this has been on folks' radar for a few years now, but it's coming back into light because of the change in the law and the settlement. But so I was tooling around. I'm like, okay, really, how much do these components cost? And it's not that. It's affordable.
It's going to get cheaper and cheaper over time, of
yeah.
course.
Well, it's the actual printer that's
yeah.
the expensive
yeah,
part.
The tools are the...
There's pared down printer devices that you can get for, you know, under $1,000.
I know. And the other thing about these guns, I mean, it's... So if you see the pictures of them, you see what they are, but it's basically it's a composite where
right.
it comes up. But it works. There's the trigger that works, and you put a bullet in the chamber, and off it goes. So, the story here is a federal judge has blocked the public availability of the blueprints that provide instructions for making guns using 3D printers just hours before the documents were expected to be published online. District Judge Robert Lasnik granted a temporary restraining order on Tuesday night, borrowing a trove of downloadable information about creating the do-it-yourself weapons. Eight attorneys general from the District of Columbia argued that the instructions posed a national security threat. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo on Tuesday also issued a cease and desist order against the man who is scheduled to post them online. I believe we'll get to this in a second, but the man who wants to ultimately do this, Cody Wilson, the founder of the nonprofit that planned to post the instructions, is saying that all of this is violating his First Amendment rights.
Yes.
He doesn't want you to make guns. He just wants
right.
to tell people about the blueprints to show you how you can make a gun.
So Wired did a great story, some really in-depth reporting, especially looking at the First Amendment aspect of speech. And so there was a quote from that story where, you know, he talked about, you know, this is basically sharing language. This is basically sharing code. And it's the idea of, you know, what happens if this happens to be a gun. And then he also said with the dawn of this technology, quote, "The gun is downloadable. No amount of petitions or die-ins or anything else can change that."
And that's where the real fear is, you know, going from Hollywood fantasy to reality. Now.
Well, and also there's the pistol that is often shown in the pictures is a Ruger 10/22.
Right.
However, there are also plans that would have been released for AR-15s and AR-10s. Mm-hmm. Those are assault style rifles.
Here's my problem with this whole thing. It's too late. There are 1,000 of these that have already been down, 1,000 of the plan that have already been downloaded. And once 1,000 are out there, it's going to be, I mean, I'm all for putting limitations on this. But I am fascinated about the president's reaction to this, which is the president goes before the people he's speaking with. And says, well, you know, I've already talked to the NRA about this. Doesn't seem sensible. Now, that's the president of the United States, who is in the pocket of the NRA, saying this.
I didn't know how to take that statement, meaning it doesn't make – because he said, I'm looking sense. Into 3D plastic guns being sold to the public. Already spoke to the NRA. Doesn't seem to make much sense.
Yeah, I feel like we need more context than
meaning it doesn't make sense. It doesn't seem to make much sense, meaning that it doesn't make much sense to hold it up, or it doesn't make much sense to do it.
Okay, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt in this case. I'm going to say he thinks this is not the best of ideas, and I started to think about this, and I came up with a whole bunch of whys. One of them is this may be what pushes the whole debate over to the anti-gun side, and he's worried about that. Two, the people who are funding the NRA, the money, is going to lose money on this.
Right.
And that is something we know. He's pretty crass, and he responds to the immediate entreaties of people like that.
Well, I was just going to say, well, taxpayers have already lost money on it because there was a $40,000 settlement on it that the government basically paid $40,000 worth of Wilson's accrued legal fees over the year as he's been debating this since, what was it, 2013?
Yeah. But this is where you have some strange bedfellows, I think, to Alan's point. You know, certainly you have the gun manufacturers who are going to lose money now that you've had these blueprints enter the market.
Absolutely.
But the onus is really going to be back onto the printers and these device manufacturers to figure whatever safeguards they can, so therefore that person cannot actually use these blueprints in the future.
Well, and I think there's the issue of reform, too, because there are laws that say, so the Obama era Undetectable Firearms Act, but then you also have laws that do make it legal that you can do a DIY gun, a do-it-yourself firearm. And that is, so you have almost two conflicting pieces of legislation, plus you have the latest move. So where does that leave, you know, people, consumers who are buying these products, because obviously there's a market for it, but also what's happening at the legislative end, you know, what do states and the federal government do about it?
Why can't we make things like artificial hearts and limbs and things that can help people? Print those up.
Right.
Like, good Lord. So Chris Cox, who's the executive director of the NRA's Institute for Legislative Action, said in a statement that many have wrongly claimed that 3D printing will lead to the production and widespread proliferation of undetectable plastic guns, said regardless of what a person may be able to publish on the internet, undetectable plastic guns have been illegal for 30 years. This is similar to the argument that they say that the gun laws that are on the books now are good enough.
Okay, so what is he really saying here?
In other words, what he's saying here is you can still, I read into this that it's still okay to publish the plans.
Right.
Well,
but no.
because making the guns is what's illegal.
I want to go back and say the NRA has its biggest funder are the gun manufacturers, and I truly think that's what this is all about. That's why the reticence on the part of the president, and I think it's the reticence on the part of the NRA.
The battle over the blueprint started in 2013 when Cody Wilson, the founder of Defense Distributed, made the first fully 3D printed pistol and posted the design files online. The federal government alleged that that violated federal law. Uploading the files, it argued, was tantamount to an illegal export of firearms. That's an interesting argument. Wilson sued. The federal government shocked all involved by reversing its position. It settled with Wilson on June 29th. This is what Jen was referring to earlier, agreeing to pay $40,000 in legal fees and exempting the company from the regulations, allowing it to post the blueprints online. His lawyer did not immediately respond to requests, and I'm sure they're looking at all of this. Meanwhile, 21 attorneys general signed a letter asking Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Attorney General Jeff Sessions to withdraw from the settlement and block the plans from going online.
And, well, that's the thing, too. I think it doesn't matter. I think Alan is right to some effect that it is too late because you do once now that the information is out there, it's been out there, it can be shared. And I think we've already had these issues. The problem is, you know, people, there are instructions to make homemade bombs. There are instructions on how to carry out attacks, how to be a sniper. We have this information floating out in our atmosphere. I think the bigger thing that will have more impact is, you know, how do you kind of monitor it and talk about it, and what other pieces of legislation will you put in place, or will the governments decide to change because of that? And I think for me, that's the most important thing to follow is, you know, how is this going to inform policy moving forward?
Well, the issue is that this is all driving everything underground. Mm-hmm. And the more and more that you know, things like this, you know, do-it-yourself, guns, bombs, whatever it could be, mm-hmm. it only is driving things more underground because nobody is going to have respect to federal law in this.
Okay, you're right, Joe. So what's the way out? Can the government forbid the manufacture of devices that make these guns?
Well, that's a question for the device manufacturer. There might be some way, but again, we're unfortunately too late in this situation.
Well, I think, do you think that the next step should be to do something like require that these weapons be serialized?
Well, you see, this is where NPR. That's where the gun people have their biggest problem, because they've been arguing all along you can't put any restrictions on gun, and that's what the Second Amendment says. And they got the Schultz on the Supreme Court to go along with it. And now they know that this is a sort of seminal moment for them. If they do this wrong, public opinion and everything else may just wash over them. So I think they're stupefied as to what to do here.
I think it would be curious to see if a lot of times when we talk about these issues, one of the big counters I hear as a reporter is just, well, these are the criminals. They're not the responsible gun owners and stuff like that. So, you know, I wonder, I feel like we haven't heard enough from the responsible gun owner folks who are speaking out on these issues. I think we hear a lot from other parties, whether it's political or whether it's, you know, these safety advocacy groups. But I think, you know, I wonder, will this be an issue that we'll hear more.
Well, you know, Jen, you are a reporter for the award-winning Berkshire Eagle. Sounds to me like a very good story. You've already done it?
Last night I was actually spent 2.5 hours on a sportsman's range and fired my first shotgun at a youth sports practice.
I'm staying away from you.
How young are these kids?
They're teenagers. 30, 35. But, you know, in the Berkshires and around here, there was a time and a place where kids used to bring their hunting rifles to school, lock them up in their lockers, go out after school, or they had brought them with them to school.
Part
after
of
they
our
went,
rural culture.
Went right. out in the morning.
But there was respect for it. That's
and
the
so, you know, we had a conversation about when did that change and how did that change? And I think a lot of issues began to happen. One person I spoke with said, you know, it was when Slucci pulled a bunch of permits from, you know, thousands of gun owners because of changes law, and I think that started, you know, making people worried. And I think that goes to your point, Joe, about when does policy or talk like this force people to, you know, go underground, be more covert instead of, you know, and then that brings to the question is, you know, what's the, is there a deficit to kind of the stigma that's created, especially in a state like that I come from in Massachusetts.
Yeah, but what do those people say? Mm. Those kids you were talking to on the range, their parents say, the gun people, about these plastic guns. What are they saying? And I think your original point is so well taken, which is, let's hear from them. Mm-hmm. And that's why a great reporter such as yourself will go and ask them that
we'll
question.
And continue to do so.
And write that
down. But also certainly the reliability of these do-it-yourself guns, too. Yeah. Because obviously, you know...
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, the one big thing I took from just seeing and talking to people was how much safety was drilled into... these young people and to the adults teaching it. And that was kind of their number one priority. And yes, with something that doesn't have these precision parts, I mean, the materials that a 3D printed gun are made out of are not precision materials.
But it won't stop Jen, the 5-year-old, from saying, what's this? Mm-hmm. You know, and doing the terrible
things
we've
seen. Well, and I think that's the fear, and I think that's, you know, from the sportsmen that I talked to, one of the fear is, you know, because we have so many, because there's exposure and people don't know how to properly put a safety on, put things away, you know, teach, you know, drill that responsibility.
But to Joe's point, I mean, I'm not defend the gun manufacturers here, but at least there are things on the market that can make those guns safe, and mm-hmm. What is the reliability of these makeshift, for want of a better term, a makeshift weapon of employing those same safety standards?
And we've seen cases in, you know, contemporary times where this has gone wrong. I think you look at the 2015 Santa Monica case, that was a homemade AR-15, essentially. And I think there was another case in California in roughly the same time, last November, I believe, where...
Well, and what we see with bump stocks the altering of a gun.
Right. And so I think there needs to be more awareness and conversations that it's not just that they're being put away because we think it's bad, but also there are additional peripheral safety concerns.
Well, that's so nice to hear that, but I don't...
We're going to take a break. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll be back, and we'll talk more about this. I know we have letters on it as well. We'll be back right after the short break. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We have a lot of letters on the issue of 3D guns. We will go through those as we work through our discussion.
Okay, David says, 3D fun. Federal statutes require a tax be paid for the manufacture of a firearm. Any handgun would have to comply with state laws, and any smoothbore handgun is a special category that also requires a federal permit. Fully automatic firearms are only legal under federal permit and are not issued to individuals, only military, police, and permitted facilities. The Second Amendment is not a free-for-all, says David.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah, what it should be and what it is, I guess, are two different things.
I couldn't agree with you more, Joe. Thank you for saying that.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that. And Keith says, so 3D printer guns are okay, but we need an ID to buy groceries. I talked about that in my 745.
Yeah. Yesterday,
he said, you need to the crowd. I don't want to talk about what the crowd was, but the crowd, let's just say, with, you know, big red hats on it. And yelling and screaming, he said to them, "You need a permit to go to the grocery store.
If you want to buy groceries, you need a picture and a card. You need ID. You go out and you want to buy anything. You need ID. You need your picture."
So that was a lie, just so that everybody knows it. If you've been to the grocery store lately, they do not ask you at the Big Y or the Price Chopper. They don't ask you for your
Unless
not easy if you're using a credit card, not even usually when you have a check.
No. But even if you pay cash, they don't ask you.
Certainly not.
Certain items, though. But that's
if you got alcohol or something like that, you may need it.
Yeah.
Okay. So 3D printer guns are okay. We need ID to buy groceries. Crazy world that we all live in. Our government doesn't want to protect its citizens. They allow undetectable guns, take away health insurance, lock up babies in cages, and pollute our environment. I thought the government was supposed to make our lives better, not worse. The president of the United States has lied 4,229 times in 558 days. Now the president claims that we need to use our IDs to buy groceries and vote. Serenity now. And that's from Keith. Now, what really puzzles me about this, I'm trying to figure it out, is our wonderful Sarah, who protects us and hands me these. She has blocked out the adjective that came before the word president. And I don't know what it was. You know what I mean? So I'm looking up the light. I still can't tell what that was.
It's all redacted.
Redacted. That's right.
It was redacted. Okay. And Jim in Montgomery, plastic gun blueprints. I was also intrigued when I read that Trump is now looking into it and talked to the NRA about it. And I agree that the NRA, now an organization led by manufacturers instead of sportsmen, sees the writing on the wall in future losses when people start making their own guns for illicit purposes instead of buying them. And in this case, I agree. It's not a bad idea to regulate. Can you publish plans for an atom bomb? I believe that's been done, by the way. I believe the plans for an atom bomb has been published. I may be wrong, but I think I'm right. I mean, when that happened. Ammunition, says Charles from Beckett, where everybody dances. Good morning, panel. Chris Rock said it best. We don't need gun control. We need bullet control. It's the only way to control the nascent make-your-own-guns movement. So how long before they figure out how to make bullets and download those?
It won't be that long.
Part of the package.
That's the issue.
Yeah. Okay. And Frank says 3D guns. Dear panel, the U.S. is already drowning in guns. So now with homemade guns, it's like dumping truckloads of opioids on every street corner. This can only lead to mass slaughter of innocent people. Do you think? That's me, not him. The NRA and GOP has blood on their hands. And that's Frank in Rhinebeck. What's important about Frank is that he spells his name F-R-A-N-C.
Huh.
I like
Frank.
That.
Frank.
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 Yeah,
Frank.
And William.
Francis, right?
It could be.
Yeah.
What'd you say, Joe?
It's shortening of Francis.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could
or he's so cool, it's just Frank.
Yeah.
Frank.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, I'll just skip that last thing I was thinking.
Yeah,
thank you, Jim.
A lot of letters, Alan. Keep it moving.
William says, First Amendment.
Don't dawdle.
Dear Roundtable, regarding your discussion this morning about sharing the right for blueprints for guns online is guaranteed by the First Amendment, protecting freedom of speech, legal experts have pointed out that there are limits of freedom of speech. Right, fire in a crowded theater. You can still, look at that. I anticipated this. You still cannot shout fire in a crowded theater. For example, that's from William from Lennox. And then Mary says, great stuff that's being 3D printed. Hi, panel. There was an article in the Greenfield Recorder on Saturday about 3D models of tumors that doctors can examine, pre-surgery, clamps, and other medical devices, all being produced at Bay State Medical in Springfield, Massachusetts, by a young man with an associate's degree in biomedical engineering from a community college. And that's Mary. That's a great letter, isn't it?
Well, that's the reality. I mean, we have 3D printers, and they do wonderful things for learning and things like that, mm-hmm. but then they have to be used for things other than good things.
You're going to say, Jen?
Oh, I was going to say, I think that I agree that it's a great letter, and thank you for highlighting some of the good that's being done with 3D printing.
And for highlighting that he has a community college degree and not, a Harvard degree, advanced degree.
Yes.
You know, people.
Well, and it's even the lovely local Berkshire Athenaeum in my neck of the woods, they have a 3D printer, and you can go and learn how to use it and create your idea.
Well, it's right here in Albany, the same thing. We have a makerspace right at the Albany Public Library.
Mm-hmm. Make
what?
It so.
A makerspace.
Mm-hmm. A makerspace?
A makerspace.
Oh, and a makerspace is?
Well, you have 3D printers. You have other things that fuel the creative economy.
It's like an open shop.
You guys know so much. Joe says, NRA will serve who? So who will the NRA serve? Gun owners who might want to print their own guns or gun manufacturers who don't want to lose customers and don't want competition?
Isn't that
from
part of the question?
From another source of guns. Mm. We've been talking about that. NRA gets about $150 million from members. Total income is around $400 million. What a dilemma for the NRA. And John says, downloadable guns, Oh boy. Does everyone realize that 3D printers use plastic to print the objects? Meltable plastic, no less. So you can kill someone with one of these, then toss it in a fire. No more evidence. Great way to get away with murder. And one more piece of plastic for the ocean.
Well, I mean, the other thing, too, is that that's the whole point. These are undetectable. I mean, that's so whether you're going through a screener or you're going through you're putting it in a fire, it's undetectable. That's the point of these and why they're so.
So you won't be. I'm sorry, Joe, because I am the most naive of the panel. So that means when you say undetectable, that you could go through a line in the airport and they would not be detectable.
I mean, they're non. Now the
well, it would show the shape.
It would show the well part of the shape, right?
Yeah, part of the shape.
So you still might get pulled over and be like, "What is?"
But what if it's in your carry? I mean, you can still move them, right? And the other question is about bullets, because they would be, those would
and
show
the screws.
Up.
They said on the NPR report this morning that you still had to buy hardware obtainable screws from the hardware store. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so then Kathleen says gun safety. To be clear, you can't drill safety into a toddler. The adult gun owner has to be responsible enough to lock up their weapons. I mentioned this earlier. Mm-hmm. Well, so far, it hasn't happened. So far, it has happened with many people, but not everyone, right. And there's a tragedy every time you turn around. Our friend Bob, who writes quite frequently, 3D guns. My question is whether the NRA backs the production of 3D guns, since that will cut into the profits of traditional gun manufacturers. Principle over profit, we see, and we've talked about that.
Unless they can figure out a way to actually capture this market.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that.
Yeah.
In other words, some regulation which says only a reputable gun manufacturer.
Right. Some sort of licensed manufacturer, if you will.
I love it.
Yeah.
Good point. Ann says, Republa Dems. Demo Republicans. Am I naive, or can we potentially see the rise of much-needed third party, but getting those in each party that have a U.S., our country is a true believer, Americans, in their hearts, to come together and promote and unite this new party? What happened to initiative and honor? Are Republicans really afraid, in quotes, of T. Trump? I am so ready for new visions while holding tight to what this country has always been. I honor those in our government that have served us well, but these are new times with frightening outcomes on our horizon. By the way, do Democrats have a vision for anything? What the heck is their message other than to lose T-Rump? Okay. And then we got a couple of letters before, but I think we'll let those go and stay on topic, Joe.
Okay, so let's take a break. When we come back, we will move on and talk about other stuff. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, and we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And we welcome your letters, as always, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Hey, did you miss the Paul Manafort trial? No. That'll be going on for a while.
although, Joe, it's running really fast. They didn't expect it to be. They thought it was going to be a 3-week trial, and they got a hell of a lot done in one day yesterday.
Off they go. So the trial on financial fraud charges opened on Tuesday with an effort by his defense team to deflect blame to the government's star witness in the case, Rick Gates, Mr. Manafort's longtime political consulting partner. The defense strategy pits the credibility of Mr. Manafort, a former campaign chairman for President Trump, against that of Mr. Gates, who has pleaded guilty to charges in the same case, and is cooperating in the inquiry led by the special counsel, Robert Mueller. And it sets up a dramatic courtroom showdown between Mr. Gates, who is scheduled to take the stand for the prosecution, and Mr. Manafort, who worked closely with him in aiding pro-Russia politicians in Ukraine for a decade, and also in 2016 on Mr. Trump's campaign. The trial overcharges that Mr. Manafort hid tens of millions of dollars he received for his work in Ukraine and then engaged in bank fraud when those funds dried up, got underway at a rapid clip. So go ahead.
What does that word overcharges mean? You said overcharges.
The trial overcharges.
Over. Oh, okay.
The trial overcharges that Mr. Manafort hid tens of millions of dollars. And so a jury of 6 men, 6 women, seated in hours after the proceedings began. And now we're off.
Well, you know, it just takes one on a jury. That's all it does. And who knows who said the right thing during the voir dire or wanted to be on that jury. We do know that Trump has been glued to his television, apparently, watching every single piece of news from the Manafort trial. So obviously he's a little bit concerned. Now, Manafort's lawyer walks out, they put the camera on him, and they say, is there any chance your client will flip? Absolutely not, says the lawyer.
Well, this is also the first test for, obviously, the Mueller investigation as well, the first courtroom test for this. So we have to see, obviously, how this will play out, because if, you know, depending on what the results of this trial with Paul Manafort will be, will also dictate the future of the Mueller investigation.
Right. And I'm sure that that's what everybody expects to happen. You know, you get pressure on him. But there is still the feeling that Trump, in a corner with sharp teeth, may in fact pardon him, and that's what he's holding out for.
Well, the issue that I wonder too is, you know, what are you left with at the end of this trial? I mean, on the technical books, it's a trial about fraud, money laundering, tax issues. So, I think you have the idea that this could create some compelling, maybe affirming, leading information, but is that actually admissible in anything else that's being investigated? I think, you know, no one's expecting to hear the R-word, Russia, being mentioned by any of the agents that are going to be testifying in this case. And I think, you know, also going ahead, you know, what else?
Well, Jen, let me put it this way. I'll tell you what you've got.
Yeah.
You got a guy who faces life in prison. Mm-hmm. That's what you got. And that's what the prosecutorial...
But anyone who is deemed as a bad guy in his book, you know, Steve Bannon, where is he? You know, Paul Manafort, 180 on him. Rick Gates, same thing. You know, there's a distancing. You know, he will work to distance himself from
Once they're in the orbit, he'll try to kick them out as far as...
Well, yeah. You see, I don't think that's a good answer. Jen, as much as I respect,
but and this is, I wish that I had a JD or something, but you know, what can really come from?
Well, it can come from is they want the guy to flip, mm-hmm. and they are taking pieces of paper. Mm-hmm. They have 1,000 pieces of paper in which he signs and says, "Put my money in this bank account." Mm-hmm. You know, so there's no two ways about it.
Right.
He did it,
right? And he you've got one bad guy.
Jen, you don't. You have a guy who they are convinced knows a lot about what was going on and mm-hmm. the relationship with the Russians. Mm-hmm. So that while the R word may not be mentioned right now, every prosecutor, including our wonderful David Soares in here, will mm-hmm. tell you the first thing you do is you put the pressure on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's what they're doing. They're saying, okay, you want to avoid a lifetime in jail? Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they'll hopefully open the floodgates for everything else. So you're talking about, mm-hmm. like, one bad guy. I mean, the thing is, like,
right.
you know, who is actually the gatekeeper in this? Mm-hmm. And that's with Manafort in the whole case.
Well, yeah, and I think one of the interesting things, too, though, is, you know, will that this issue get more diverted to, you know, Manafort versus what Rick Gates has said, and if that will detract from actually going to what you're suggesting is having those floodgates open. You know, I think it's going to be a huge game of
Well, certainly, you know, whatever Gates says, whatever Manafort says, when they're on oath, could be used down the mm-hmm. road. I mean, we're seeing that here in New York State with obviously with Todd Howe and the whole corruption scandal mm-hmm. here.
Right, and Todd Howe's bad behavior, both as a witness, and they put him in
right.
jail too.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't count a whit towards finding Prococo
right.
guilty during that. So I am sure that this is, now here's where the novel that Joe is going to write about all of this is so interesting. Because
you.
No, you.
No.
No, you.
I'll write the foreword to it.
All right, thank you.
No, you. Here's where it gets interesting, and the dark music in the background is the people on the jury. Mm. Did they pick successfully, voir dire, 12 honest people who are going to do what they did in the Prococo trial, or is there one sleeper agent in the group?
Well, I mean, we have to trust our system, right?
You have
you
to, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what else do you do?
Not trust the system.
Well, I mean, but then, okay. I mean, you can be skeptical of the system, but I think you have to.
No. But I'm always looking for what the dark spot.
Well, aware of that, but I'm looking
at
you know, you look at the at what has happened so far. I mean, most of these people pled guilty,
mm-hmm. right?
So you have this going to trial, and there does seem to be, at least from what we have just discussed, and. I mean, you want the case to have, you want the man to have his fair hearing in court, but there does seem to be an awful lot of evidence.
No, there mm-hmm. are. There are.
I mean, there's
tremendous. It's all on paper. That's what's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's not just testimony. It's on paper. Mm-hmm. And the defense is he didn't know. He left it to his underlings to put the money in the banks and to mm-hmm. Gates and the other people, and he didn't really know what was going on.
I mean, let's not forget this is a 32-count indictment.
Right, yes. Right.
One or two. And how much was it? $60 million, something like that.
Yeah.
A lot of money.
And offshore accounts. So,
but Manafort seems like such a tough guy. I mean, that's what's interesting about this.
They seem tough until they finally break.
Well, you wonder whether they. Yeah, it's true. I remember Jimmy Breslin column. They were leading one of the city councilmen away. I would forget which one it was. And his kid was crying. And he says, if once they could just think before they did this stuff.
Right.
I think in opening statements they called him a shrewd liar.
That's what they're saying about Gates also.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what the
defense
is.
Right, but he was business partners with Manafort, Rick Gates. He also lobbied for a pro-Russian former president of the Ukraine. Mm-hmm. But he is cooperating with Robert Mueller.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's right. So one always projects themselves, right, Joe, into what would you do?
Right.
What would you do if you did this? Would you say, I prefer not to spend the rest of my life in jail?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I think so.
I think that's a big yes.
Right. Yeah. I think that's what they're banking on, right? Isn't that what the prosecution is banking on?
Yeah. Well, you have to hit that point in your conscience. Like, you know, when is it worth it to actually make that conversion point? And mm-hmm. that's, you know, with Manafort, we haven't seen that yet. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we will.
Right. It's all been out there. Like we've seen in court documents, you know, the Viktor Yanukovych evidence and his background has been out there and those associations with Ukraine. And, you know, I think it's just a matter of what happens next. How long will it take? And, you know, will it be timely enough?
So putting yourself into, back to your original conversation here, putting yourself into Manafort's brain mm-hmm. or psyche, you know, any kind of interpretation is this guy doesn't seem willing to budge. He doesn't want to get off. So what is he thinking that he gets by not budging? Well, one thing we've already heard about today is he gets a pardon. He's the potential is a pardon. And everybody at the other end of this radio is saying, nah, he can't afford to pardon him. Oh, yes, he can. Because remember, he has sharp claws and sharp teeth and he's in the corner right now. And he has choices. One choice is to pardon him. Another choice, of course, for crimes committed or that he will commit. We know that it can be done in the future as it was done for Nixon. So, you know, the other choice, of course, is, what are his choices? His choices are either to keep on holding on and hoping for a pardon or waiting. And if he's convicted, that's when you figure he'll turn.
Mm-hmm. Right. In the appellate process.
But what kind of guy is this? Don't you, when you look at him walking in there,
Manafort.
Yeah.
When you look at him walking in there and you look at what he's saying and the lawyer saying,
the whole appearance,
everything.
Not,
and you know, and you say, okay, how is his brain wired? Mm-hmm. At least I say that.
Well, this is why he was so trusted by these individuals, and now he's on trial now.
Exactly.
Because he had that shrewd look, the appearance, and he was willing to do this against our country's interests.
But also, correct. But there was also the working the phones of the judge, even after the indictments. You know,
yeah.
You know,
right.
and then don't do this, and then he went on and did it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Don't go there, and then he went there.
Mm-hmm. You know, so what do you make of that?
Well, I mean, you were asking what kind of man, so I think we know. I mean, I think he's moving. He keeps on moving the rules and testing the system.
Well,
we've
talked about this 1,000 times. Is he a crook? Is he a crook? Or is he crazy? And I know I'm not allowed to use the word crazy. I hear from mental health people.
I don't think you. I don't know that crazy would enter into. I think he clearly
has a
snaky, right?
Yeah, I would say snake. Yeah.
I didn't call him a snake. I just said he was snaky. Snakey.
Yeah. My position has always been: if you do a heinous crime, you have to, in some ways, be mentally ill.
Is stealing money? I mean, we have to go to a break. But is stealing money a heinous crime compared to murder?
Well, it depends on how much money and what were the implications.
And it depends on whether you're going to harm your family and your friends, and you put everything at risk.
But for every one Manafort that's on trial, there's dozens more out there like him. I mean, look at the Panama Papers and the Paradise Papers.
Right.
And look at the outcomes of those. And that's why I raised that question earlier is, you know, what will come out of this trial that's evidence enough to lead into the Mueller investigation and have an actual meaningful impact?
Well, life in prison, as I say.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to The Roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have Alan Chartok, Jen Smith from the Berkshire Eagle, and communications consultant Joe Bonilla. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org.
Do we know who the good banjo music was coming from?
That was Stuart Duncan, Sam Bush, and Mark Howard.
Ooh. I like the Sam Bush.
And they are, the playlist is, as always, is on our website at WAMC.org.
Are they going to be somewhere?
No, right here, just playing the music. Just helping us out.
Usually they're going
to
be.
We try to forward promote events in our region, but in this one is just good old fashioned bumper music. Yes, absolutely. Okay, so let's move. Did you have letters?
Let's
go to those.
I do. Okay, panel, please learn and internalize one thing. Explanation mark. The second, all in capital
Sounds
letters.
Like homework.
Yes.
All in capital letters.
Oh, no,
screaming,
mad.
As we say. Okay. The Second Amendment had nothing to do with an individual ownership of a gun. Please stop repeating this lie. It does today only because the lies that are the basis of the false Heller decision. And that's from William. And Jonathan says, Mueller investigations. Flipping Mueller won't matter. Giuliani is prepping the Republicans, and I think he's going to get away with everything. Mueller will release his report without any indictment of the president. The House will mull it over and put it into a draw. It will turn into Trump and his supporters versus the Dems. In that scenario, Trump wins, the country loses. Jonathan from Valley Falls. He may be right. I hope he's wrong, but he may well be right. It all depends when Mueller does the report. Mueller does the report after, and only if the House flips, then it could get very dangerous.
Right.
Because there could, of course, be an impeachment move, which I think would pass, go forward to the Senate, which would probably kill it. Nevertheless, it could be real trouble for the president. I would think. Okay, Manafort. Says Glenn. In a strategy to count on a pardon and or that of any jury will have at least one diehard Trump supporter who will hang the jury every time, ? That's what I said before. That's what I'm worried about.
Right.
Just one person sitting there, that's all it takes. I had a cousin, I told you, the woman pushed him into the subway tracks, and he broke a lot of bones. And the jury was 11 to 1. And the reason was that she had said to the jurors, I did it because Jesus told me to do it. And the one said, well, you know, if Jesus told you to do it, then you did it. You know, then that's what happened. And she refused to get off the dime and change her. Just to be fair, it could have been Moses said or, you know.
Right.
Mohammed said, I just want you to know.
But, I mean, it couldn't be, you know, again, a sleeper agent, or it could be, you know, somebody, again, like that, that has some other ulterior motive,
could be.
Personally.
Yeah. Good morning, panel. I definitely do not think Manafort will flip as he knows he will get a presidential pardon after conviction. I hope I'm wrong. And take care. Bike from Gardner. And Teresa says, Manafort. Is Manafort keeping mum because he's afraid of the Russian mob? Is that why Trump is acting like Putin's puppy? Jessamy says, for your information, 3D printers can print in metal and other materials. Just for the record, 3D printers can print in a plethora of materials, metal, ceramics, human tissue, etc., not just melts plastic. Check out a service such as Shapeways, who offer printing in 45-plus materials. Best, Jessamy, what's 45-plus materials? Anybody know?
Well, different.
45 different materials.
Yes. Right.
Well,
right.
Think,
right.
Thanks, Joe. You know, and she's, I don't know the gender pronoun, but this writer is correct that, you know, 3D printing materials can be,
right.
You know, even plastic can be enhanced. There's evidence out there that they've used 3D printing to basically reproduce a steel firearm. So it's absolutely correct.
But obviously right now the most popular in the market is still going to be plastic composite. And obviously as we see advances in technology, metals and other materials that
right.
could
the,
cause
the
more
plastic's
harm.
The most right. accessible, cheap and...
Precisely.
Yeah. Right, right. Okay, shall I go on?
Yes.
James says, DIY bullets. Complete marksmen commonly make their own... competitive marksmen commonly make their own ammunition to ensure consistency, so the equipment and techniques are already available. That's from James in Williamstown. Nial says, 8-1 3D handgun plans. Good morning. Taking the fuzzier ethical and practical concerns about plastic handguns, I'm interested in the authority to issue an injunction suppressing the publication of the blueprints. As far as I know, it's not illegal to publish recipes for whiskey or instructions for fashioning a still. How is this different legally?
Right. Well, and I think that will be one to watch, especially for this region, because its legislators signed on to that. So we've got legislators from New York, Massachusetts, and Connecticut, not Vermont, who have signed on. So I think it'll be interesting to watch those decisions as they happen.
Well, just to speak on the still side, and it's a manufacturer and sale that is illegal, because obviously one can still create a moonshine still.
Mm-hmm. And all you need is a bathtub.
That's all you need. And everyone will go blind at that point, too. So, yeah.
That's not funny. I apologize in advance. Gun owners, panel, short and sweet, is requested the letter. When will responsible gun owners step up and address strongly these type of issues? Thanks, Bob from Paseco.
They've had opportunities every step of the way with every massacre, with every incident, and still, I don't know.
Well said, Joe. Frank, this is F-R-A-N-K, 3D gun safety. Good morning, panel. 3D guns are unreliable and dangerous to the users. Regulations are needed to protect everyone, even from themselves, as said Frank. And Bonnie says, NRA. Jeffrey from Big Indian, New York, who is at this moment tiling my bathroom, has a comment. America wants their guns. The number one contributors to the NRA are U.S. citizens, $5, $10, and $20 donations, not the large gun manufacturers. You are giving fake news. That's not true. They're getting tremendous amounts of donations from the...
I think both happen, and that's the bottom line. Right. You have these big grants and, you know, other sorts of funds that go in, you know, lobbying groups and so on and so forth. And then you do have citizens who donate from their own pockets.
Keep tiling. And Jen says, plastic guns. I come from a long line of hunters or a rural area. I'm an alum of Teen 4-H Gun Club and a current rifle owner. I personally find no reason for handguns or assault rifles at all, aside from military or some law purposes. Though ideally not, I see absolutely no, in capital letters, sane reason for the accessibility to print weapons of mass destruction, which they are. Well, you know, the problem here is we are running up against a whole bunch of stuff. So, for example, on the one side is the right to publish, the right to, you know, the day you say, okay, you can't put this plan in or that plan in, you're giving the government the chance to say, you can't say something about Donald Trump, you know. And, you know, and on the other hand, you got this insanity of the potential for these guns being made this way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I think now we have to sit back and kind of watch to see how this due process effort goes through.
Right. But at the same time, the market needs to figure some sort of remedy at the same time, because due process can take a while here.
Exactly.
But technology does not stop.
Exactly.
I don't know that there is a remedy. I think, as I said before, if 1,000 are already out, you know, and the people put that on the internet. I don't see how that individuals do.
Right. Well, I think the remedy is going to come down to the manufacturers of these printers. I think there might be some way that there might be some sort of detection where if they were to upload these blueprints into, obviously, the firmware of these printers.
Algorithms.
Correct.
Algorithms. Yeah. Boy.
All right, let's move on to let that hang in the air for a minute, right?
It's taking us all over the algorithms.
Okay, let's.
What happens when all those algorithms, they have artificial intelligence and all the rest?
Yeah.
The next word of the world.
Okay. Yeah. So let's go.
That's where that went.
I dodged the bullet.
That is. That is where we are. Hey, who wants to talk about the fight with Charles
Koch?
Taking Charles Koch versus Donald Trump, and then Donald Trump versus Charles Koch.
Yep.
Whoa.
That's the right answer.
This is great.
Response.
This is fantastic.
I agree.
President Trump has given Republicans good reason to tolerate his unruly leadership style. His tax cuts, deregulation push, and nomination of conservative judges amount to the most orthodox Republican agenda any president has pursued since Ronald Reagan. Few had better reason to appreciate Mr. Trump's results than Charles Koch, a billionaire industrialist who is one of the Republican Party's biggest donors. This from the New York Times. Yet, Mr. Koch's simmering frustrations with the president over trade and immigration have now spilled over into an ugly public feud with Mr. Trump and candidates who side with him by calling Mr. Trump's trade policies detrimental and denouncing divisive leadership. Mr. Koch is making a provocative political move that, be it hardball strategy or more of a ploy, threatens to complicate Republican efforts to hold onto their slim congressional majorities in the November midterms. Mr. Trump hit back on Tuesday by attacking Mr. Koch, his ailing brother and business partner David, and the powerful political network they founded as totally overrated and a total joke in real Republican circles. I know we don't take the words of the president completely seriously when he says things, but it's hard to believe that in Republican circles, people do not have that the Koch brothers would be considered a joke.
Yeah. I mean, they've led the conversation for the last 10 to 15 years with millions of dollars in contributions. I mean, the reason why we have a Republican majority is in large part due to their efforts. Mm-hmm. So I don't believe anybody on the House, on the Hill, believes they are a joke in any which way. But again, it certainly sets up a huge battle between the president and the Republicans' most beneficial donor.
And you look at these substantive issues. For example, his trade wars, which many Republicans don't like. They're still afraid of him, and they're still afraid of getting primaried. But in fact, the Kochs, who are basically libertarians, mm-hmm. with all the good and much bad that some of it brings to the conversation. So, the fact that he chooses to, and I've been scratching my head about this one all morning, the fact that he chooses to take on the Kochs means that this guy, who has an instinct for what he thinks public opinion is, mm-hmm. thinks that by taking on the, quote, evil Kochs, somehow it helps him.
I
was just going to say, I think that there are people in this country who want someone to take a hard stance against the Kochs, but I'm not sure that our president.
It's a Republican, right.
The unsung hero is not going to be Donald Trump for here.
So he says, I made them richer. Their network is highly overrated. I have beaten them at every turn. they want to protect their company, and this is where I think this hits the base, right? And this is what he thinks. So they want to protect their companies outside the U.S. from being taxed. I'm for America first and the American worker, a puppet for no one. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Well, again, it goes back to the president's strategy of distract, distract, distract. And mm-hmm. so you wage a battle against the Koch network, you know, and especially Charles and David Koch, and with David being ill, where he believed that they're on the ropes at this point. So I would say that I really don't see the long-term strategy here. I think it's just, it's the flavor of the week in terms of a new battle.
Well, he's a predator. He's thinking he's looking at prey at this point because someone is thinking out of it. But, I think, again, the Koch's party stepped forward and said they're willing to put $400 million behind, you know, going to war on this and to defend the free trade system. And they will. There's nothing in history that right. says they won't.
And why shouldn't they? Yeah. They're going to die. Everybody's going to die sooner or later. Yep. One of them is apparently ill. The other yeah. one is taking this on.
Right. And then so I think Charles's son, Chase, is just in a totally different industry. And so, you know, Charles has definitely been the figurehead for this, yeah. this company.
Yeah. So here's some letters. You want some letters, Joe?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
No. Is that a no or a yes?
Well, this interesting Maybe. Thing. The Steve Bannon part of this is interesting, I think, because Steve Bannon says the Koch brothers are trying to weaponize the Never Trump movement against Republicans by saying they'll work with Democrats, and what they're doing has to be condemned, including by Vice President Pence. This statement coming because Pence, a former congressman and governor of Indiana, has been a longtime beneficiary of mm-hmm. Koch donations, and his inclusion in the Trump administration and the ties he retains to the Koch political operation underscore how difficult it has been to meld the two disparate political orbits. So where is Pence in all this?
So you can assume one thing. You haven't seen Pence do anything that in any way challenges this president. You have not seen that happening. And he stood up and it was, you know, I have to say, you know, I have a pillow in my hand. The first thing I want to do is say Giuliani on the television. I want to throw the pillow. When I saw Pence this morning, I wanted to throw the pillow because the guy doesn't think. And that's clear.
Well, he's the one who's saying, though, that Russia is responsible for Russia and Obama are responsible for the cybersecurity issues we currently have.
Well, the issue is Mike Pence is far more savvy than we give him credit for. He's still meeting with Republican operatives. He still has his own network of folks.
But what's his number one objective, being president of the United States?
Of course.
He thinks if Trump gets thrown out, he moves up and he's right. He's a bona fide Republican of the old order, or some of the old order anyway, and he'll get to be president. But he knows that to screw up would be to challenge Trump,
right?
Really confront Trump. So anyway, there you are.
2 minutes and okay. 2 letters.
All right, Anthony, the Manafort trial will end up in the annals of circus. What better way for Trump to slap the justice and judiciary system in the face by pardoning Manafort? Trump will claim it was a sham, no matter what evidence is found, and his base will love it. We are just helping Trump carve up more red meat to his base. So, Anthony, what else do you do? I mean, I don't... Okay, so Manafort says, Scott, did they ever resolve why the GOP platform was changed favorably towards Russia during the convention? And wasn't Manafort chairman of the campaign and heavily involved in the convention? Maybe that's the tie that binds. And that's from Scott. And then Karen says, hi, panel. What makes sense to me is that Manafort is more afraid of the Russians than jail. He has seen what Putin will do to those who turn against him. His family may be under threat if he talks. And Carolyn says, pardons. Hi, are there any limitations that apply to presidential pardons? Yeah, states can convict you if you committed state crimes in the same place. In Manafort's case, what possible rationale exists? Thanks, Carolyn.
Well, thanks, Carolyn, and thanks to Joe Bonilla, Jen Smith, Alan Chartok. Thank you all for participating this morning. We will be back with more... Good morning. Thank you all. I appreciate it. Give you an opportunity to respond to the thanks. I apologize for that. We'll be back after this.